Hi, and welcome to Halfwood History. I'm Jonathan.
And I'm Kylie.
And this is a show where we talk about the upcoming week, but a long time ago.
And sometimes not so long ago.
Yeah, yeah. What week do you got?
I have August 31st through September 6th.
And nice.
My topic actually isn't from that long ago this time around.
Oh, really?
And by that, I mean the 60s.
That's only so, like a year after when I said mine's a little bit long ago.
Well, our parents were alive at this point. So like.
Not mine. If it's in early 60s.
No, it's late 60s.
Oh, okay.
67. All right. So my topic comes from September 2nd, 1967.
Cool.
So I'm going to continue a little bit on my theme from my last week of interesting islands. Actually, this is mostly coincidental, but I figured I'd give it a good spin because the other topic I thought about was Jack the Ripper, and I figured this would be less morbid.
Okay.
Don't
Kylie
worry.
Kylie picking the less morbid thing for once.
I will get around to Jack the Ripper. I just want to make sure I have enough time to like really dive into it. When I do Jack the Ripper, because there's so much like up all in there, all of that thing, like conspiracy theories and like just all sorts of stuff. So I want to make sure that if I ever do that, I have enough time to like really do it. Okay. So this week I'm talking about the establishment of the Principality of Sealand on, you know, September 2nd, 1967. Have you ever heard of Sealand?
No.
Okay.
I assume it's not SeaWorld.
No, it is not SeaWorld.
Not going to some blackfish category here, which is also morbid.
Yep, nope. There are no animals were harmed in the making of this principality.
Okay.
Well,
not sure that's
I don't know
true.
About that. okay, so it didn't, first things first, it didn't start out as like a principality. It was in fact actually not even an island. It is not an island.
So it's man-made?
Yes. So during World War II, the British built armed towers called Monsell Forts in the Thames and Mersey estuaries that helped defend the United Kingdom, you know, from German submarines and all sorts of stuff. Kind of like lighthouses, but for enemies.
That's funny because one of the other things that I looked through for this week was that the first lighthouse in the U.S. was built, which was in Boston.
Yes, actually, that was going to be my fun fact, so thanks for that.
Oh, I'm
you
sorry.
Jackass. it was Little Brewster Island, if since you ruined my fun fact.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean it.
Anyway, back to this fake island. So HM Fort Ruffs, which was also called Ruffs Tower, was the, quote, the first of originally four naval forts designed by G. Monsell to protect the Thames estuary. So this artificial naval installation is similar in some respects to early, like, fixed offshore oil platforms. Like, you know, the big ones that are, like people live on them. Like,
yeah.
Big old, yeah. Okay. So it consisted of a rectangular 168-by-88-foot reinforced concrete pontoon base with a support superstructure of two 60-foot-tall, 24-foot-diameter hollow reinforced concrete towers. And the walls were roughly 3.5 inches thick. So, like, you know, some pretty thick.
Pretty sturdy.
Sturdy contraption there,
yeah. It's got to be in the ocean, so yeah.
Yep. So the overall weight is estimated to have been approximately 4,500 tons.
Okay.
Like tons,
big,
not pounds.
Big numbers.
Yeah, so it weighs a lot. It was installed on rough sands, which is like a, sandbar. That's the word. Approximately 10 miles off the Harwich seafront on February 11th, 1942. And to install it, the fort was like towed from the docks, like above the water where it had built or it had been built. And then the base was intentionally flooded so that it would sink to rest on the sandbar.
Yep.
And the water there is 37 feet, if anyone cares. So the British government official entities used Fort Ruffs for a variety of purposes until 1956, when all full-time personnel were completely removed. In 1966, Paddy Roy Bates, who operated Radio Essex, and Ronan O'Reilly, who operated Radio Caroline, landed on and occupied Fort Ruffs. These were pirate radio stations. So they... people who ran them quite frequently inhabited deserted or very out of the way locations in, quote, an attempt to bypass the draconian broadcasting restrictions of the time, which permitted little more than formal broadcasting by the BBC.
Yep.
Yeah. So according to the official Sealand website, Bates's station, Radio Essex, and others like it were much loved by the British public as they supplied everything that the BBC did not at the time, namely pop music and amusing presenters.
Oh, wow.
So I guess the BBC was boring back then?
Yeah, burn BBC.
Ouch. I don't know. They gave us Doctor Who. So, like, I mean, all things considered.
I know you like it, but honestly, I'm bored out of my mind whenever I watch it.
But I will say, I never watched, like, original Doctor Who. I've only watched since, what, 2004 when it came out?
I think it's great that you love it, but I think I would characterize most stuff on the BBC as boring.
I feel like it's interesting because, like, I know some people who love, like, British television, and then some people are like, nah.
Like, I love, like, British, like, humor and, mm-hmm. like, how dry it is a lot of the time.
Yeah, but, like,
and
British drama.
Oh, my God. I mean, I find American dramas bad for other reasons, but for some reason, British dramas just are very good at being boring.
To you.
Yeah.
Which is fair. I mean, everyone has their own taste.
I would 100% like this pirate radio.
Yes, I think you would. However, it appears the two radio pirates couldn't always see eye to eye, and after numerous disagreements, Bates seized the tower and claimed it for his own. O'Reilly attempted to storm the fort in 1967, but Bates thwarted the attack with guns and petrol bombs. So, like, actually, like, defended his base, I guess. And as a result, the British Royal Marines went to the fort and ordered Bates to surrender, but received warning shots fired by his son, Michael, like, across the bow.
Uh-oh.
The pair were then arrested, because they were still British citizens, and charged with weapons offenses, but the court threw the case out as it didn't have jurisdiction beyond the territorial waters of Britain, and technically, Fort Ruffs was in international waters.
Oops.
Yep. Bates took this as a de facto recognition of his country and 7 years later issued a constitution, flag, and national anthem, among other things, for the Principality of Sealand. However, it would seem that there was more competition for Sealand because in August of 1978, Alexander Achenbach, who describes himself as the Prime Minister of Sealand, hired several German and Dutch mercenaries to lead an attack on Sealand while Bates and his wife were off in England.
Oh.
Yeah. Apparently, Achenbach, sorry, I don't think that's how you pronounce it, but I can't do it any other way.
That's fine. Keep going.
Achenbach had disagreed with Bates over plans to turn Sealand into a luxury hotel and casino, where he wanted fellow German and Dutch businessmen to, like, be able to come and, you know, spend their money and do whatever. Achenbach and his men stormed the platform with speedboats, jet skis, and helicopters, and took Bates' son Michael as hostage.
Uh-oh.
Yep. But Michael was able to retake Sealand somehow and capture Achenbach and the mercenaries using weapons that were stashed on the platform.
Every time you say Achenbach now, I'm just thinking Admiral Akbar.
Jeez. Ow.
Don't punch your mic.
I didn't mean to. Okay. He was charged with treason against Sealand and was held, basically in jail unless he paid 75,000 Deutschmarks, which is more than $35,000 in U.S.
Woof, that's a chunk of change.
Yeah. Luckily for Achenbach, Germany sent a diplomat to negotiate for his release. Roy Bates relented after several weeks of negotiations and subsequently claimed that the diplomat's visit constituted de facto recognition of Sealand by Germany. He seems to make a lot of assumptions that, like, people are de facto recognizing it.
Yep.
And just kind of going with, like, hey, just because, like, you know, you sent a diplomat to do this thing because I'm holding one of your people prisoner, essentially, means that you recognize my country.
Yep.
And not that you're... I feel like most other places would call you, like, domestic terrorist. Is that how that would be if you're holding people hostage? No.
Well, I mean, did they consider Sealand to be part of Germany?
Oh, no, you're right.
Okay. Domestic terrorists.
Yeah, you're right. Yep, because it's in the British channel area right there. Yeah. Okay. Anyway, following the former's repatriation, Achenbach and Gernot Putz established a government in exile, which was sometimes known as the Sealand Rebel Government or the Sealandic Rebel Government, and they established their Sealand government in Germany.
So do we have two Sealand governments now?
Yes, we have the Sealand government of the people who established it.
So the principality, yeah. And then we have the rebellion.
And then we have this, like, rebel, yeah.
Good.
And mind you, they're fighting over 168, like, square feet of like, concrete, essentially.
Good. Like,
okay. So, unfortunately for Sealand, the UK extended its territorial waters from 3 to 12 nautical miles in 1987, which meant that Sealand was now inside the British water territory.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, the United Kingdom is one of 165 parties to the United Nations Convention on the Law of the Sea, which has been in force since 1994. Nope, 1994, sorry. Which states in Part 5, Article 60, that, quote, artificial islands, installations, and structures do not possess the status of islands. They have no territorial sea of their own, and their presence does not affect the delimitation of the territorial sea, the exclusive economic zone, or the continental shelf. So, legally, Sealand couldn't be its own territory since it's a man-made structure in the territorial sea of Britain.
Yeah.
Upholding this determination in a 1990 court case and then a 1991 appeal in the U.S. regarding registering ships in Sealand for a flag of convenience, the court ruled against allowing a Sealand-flagged vessel, basically saying that, like, you couldn't use a Sealand, like, you couldn't register your boat under Sealand.
It's not real. Yeah. Of course you can't.
Yeah, and then Bates never, like, contested it. I think the person who was trying to register their ship to Sealand did the appeal, but Bates never argued with it. And for anyone who doesn't know what a flag of convenience is, it basically means that the ship's owner registers the vessel in a country other than their own, usually to avoid things like strict safety measures and, like, taxes
yep.
on their boat or whatever. It's mostly, like, merchant vessels and stuff, too, or, like, personal, so... In an interesting turn of events, in 1997, the Bates family revoked all Sealand passports, including those that they themselves had issued over the previous 22 years. There were thought to have been about 150,000 Sealand passports in circulation, which is way more than I thought.
That's way more people than can fit on 168 square feet.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever it was.
Oh, yeah. Like, no. So apparently the real reason that they revoked the passports was due to the realization that an international money laundering ring had appeared and was using the sale of fake Sealand passports to finance a drug trafficking and money laundering operation.
Ah.
Yeah. So, from Russia and Iraq.
Good,
so,
good.
Yeah, yeah. So the ringleaders of this operation were based in Madrid, but had ties to various groups in Germany, including Achenbach's rebel Sealand government in exile.
Whoa.
Yep. So this group had used fake Sealandic diplomatic immunity and license plates, and were even reported to have sold 4,000 fake Sealandic passports to Hong Kong citizens for an estimated $1,000 each. So more hard times were yet to come when in 2006, the top platform of the tower caught fire due to an electrical fault. One person was transported by rescue helicopter to the hospital, and a lifeboat stood by until the fire was put out. Luckily, though, all the damage was able to be repaired, like, within that next year. Apparently, Sealand has been offered for sale between 2007 and 2010 a couple of times.
Okay.
In 2007, the Pirate Bay, an online index of digital content of entertainment, media, and software founded by the Swedish think tank Piratbyran. So the Pirate Bay attempted to purchase Sealand after harsher copyright measures in Sweden forced them to look for a base of operations elsewhere. But I'm guessing they couldn't meet the asking price, which apparently was 750 million euros.
Whoa.
Yeah. Or 600 million pounds, or about 906 million American dollars.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It's a lot. For 168 square feet.
Of land that doesn't actually belong to anyone.
Of concrete.
It belongs to Britain. So.
Yeah. So now on to the, quote, royal family. Regardless of its actual legal status, Sealand is managed by the Bates family as if it were a recognized sovereign entity with them as the hereditary royal rulers.
Fake it till you make it.
Yep. Roy Bates styles himself as Prince Roy, and his wife was Princess Joan. Their son is known as His Royal Highness Prince Michael and has been referred to as the Prince Regent by the Bates family since 1999. He also serves as Sealand's acting, quote, head of state and also its head of government. So, like, he runs the show, I guess.
Yeah.
Prince Roy passed away in October of 2012 after a long battle with Alzheimer's, and his wife, Princess Joan, passed in March of 2016, leaving Michael as the sole ruler of Sealand. The facility is now occupied by one or more caretakers representing Michael Bates, who himself resides in Essex, England. So he doesn't even live there.
Hmm.
Yeah. Basically, they have like a like steward or something that, who like manages the building itself or the construction.
So strange.
Yeah. And if you're interested in reading about his life on Sealand, he has written an autobiography titled Holding the Fort, which, quote, uncovers the truth behind Michael's kidnapped by armed terrorists, his family setting up their own island nation, government sieges, top secret government documents, and multiple attempts to bring an end to the Sealand dream.
Ah, he's a crazy person.
And it also includes previously unseen photos from his family's personal collection.
Cool.
I
have previously unseen photos from my family's personal collection.
Yeah, well, your family is not royalty.
I mean, we could be royalty as much as these people are royalty, so.
Oh, well, wait. We can become royalty. You just wait. So you can also purchase an author signed copy for double the price.
Ah, good.
Yes. So on to some interesting, like, tidbits. Sealand holds the Guinness Book of World Records for the smallest area to lay claim to a nation status. Its motto is E Mare Libertas, which means from the sea freedom, which appears on stamps, coins, and passports. Sealand also has a national anthem with the same title as its national motto, which is composed by Londoner Basil Simonecco. The instrumental anthem has no lyrics, but was in fact recorded by the Slovak Radio Symphony Orchestra and released on their National Anthems of the World, Volume 7, Qatar to Syria CD in 2005.
That's
so
funny.
Hey, it got included on the National Anthem of the World CD, so like something. There have also been dozens of coins minted since 1972, including some from the Achenbach and his German group that features a likeness of the Prime Minister Seeger, which is his first name, as he was called. And Sealand's coins and postage stamps are denominated in Sealand dollars, which it deems to be at parity with the U.S. dollar.
Okay.
So Sealand first issued postage stamps in 1969 and issued them through 1977, but then took a little stamp hiatus and then began issuing them again in 2010. Interestingly, Sealand is not a member of the Universal Postage Union. Therefore, its inward address is a P.O. box in the British borough of Ipswich.
It just, everything that you say makes it sound more and more like someone packed up their toys and, like, went off into the woods and said, "We're not part of you, Britain."
I mean, yeah.
But please, don't send all my mail to my mom's house.
So apparently, once something is mailed to Sealand's tourist and government office, it will then be taken to Sealand, like, by boat. So I guess you can't send something directly to someone. You have to, like, send it via the government office, I guess. Also, another fun fact, Sealand only has one street address, The Row.
The Row.
Yep. So Sealand is not recognized by any major international sporting body, go figure, and its population is insufficient to maintain a team composed entirely of Sealanders in any team sport. However, Sealand does claim to have official national athletes, including non-Sealanders who just claim to sport for Sealand, I guess.
What sport?
You just wait.
Oh, no.
These athletes take part in various sports such as curling, mini golf, football, fencing, ultimate frisbee. Well, ultimate, but I had to look at what ultimate was, and it is what we call ultimate frisbee.
Right.
Don't play it. So I
mean,
I don't know.
We call it ultimate here as well.
Oh, well, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Table football and athletics, although all it's, and I did look it up, athletics is like an actual like sport. It's like a kind of like a decathlon kind of yeah, thing.
I yeah, I believe that.
Okay. Although all of its teams compete out of the country, so like they don't compete there, obviously.
Yeah,
it's 168 feet. Sealand claims that its first official athlete was Darren Blackburn of Oakville, Ontario, Canada, who was appointed in 2003. Blackburn has represented Sealand at a number of local sporting events, including marathons and off-trail races. In 2004, Mountaineer Slater Oviatt carried the Sealandic flag to the top of Muztagh Ada, which is a mountain. I did not look up where.
Watch it just be some 168 square foot hill. They made up the name so that they could say that they planted their flag there.
In 2007, Michael Martel represented the Principality of Sealand in the World Cup of Kung Fu held in Quebec City, Canada, bearing the designation of Athleta Principalitas Bellatorius, which is Principal Martial Arts Athlete and Champion. Martel won 2 silver medals, becoming the first ever Sealand athlete to appear in a world championship podium. So good for you. In 2008, Sealand won the World Egg Throwing Championship.
They're just going for whatever they can get their hands on. Like, some of the things you said was mini golf and table football, a.k.a. foosball. Are they just going from, like, college campus to college campus? Like, is that what they're doing?
Probably. Okay. So, yeah, they won the World Egg Throwing Championship, and I can't say that without laughing. In 2013, the mountaineer Kenton Cool placed a Sealand flag at the summit of Mount Everest, which I do know that one.
Are you sure?
Yes. In August of 2018, competitive swimmer Richard Royal became the first person to swim the 12 kilometers from Sealand to the mainland, finishing in 3 hours and 29 minutes.
But why would you want to?
Royal visited the platform before the swim, getting his passport stamped, presumably by Michael. His Sealand passport, BTW. He entered the water from a bosun's chair, signaling the start of the swim, and then finished on Felixstowe Beach. It was accredited as an inaugural and therefore current world and British record by the World Open Water Swimming Association and the British Long Distance Swimming Association. Royal was subsequently awarded a Sealand knighthood by Principal Michael.
Might as well be a principal.
I know, right? Prince Michael. And the swim was the subject of a short documentary film entitled Escape from Sealand, which is aptly named, in my opinion.
Yeah.
And then last month, competitive swimmer Iris Ashman became the first woman to make the swim, finishing in 5 hours and 20 minutes, according to Richard Royal's tweet.
Last month?
Yeah, August of 2020.
Jeez.
Yeah. So did you know you can become a Noble of Sealand and all you have to do is fill out a form online and give them money?
How much money?
Well, I'm glad you asked. For the low, low price of $656.53, you can call yourself a Duke or Duchess of Sealand.
Does anyone want to buy us a Duke and Duchess of Sealand nobility record?
Well, if that's not quite within your budget, fear not. There are other titles you can purchase, including Counter Countess for just shy of $300, Sir or Dame, aka Knighthood, for $130, Baron or Baroness for $90, or you can become a generic Lord or Lady for just $45.
So please, someone buy us
a lordship
or anything in there so that we can introduce ourselves as Lord Halfwit and Lady Historian.
We will forever sign off this show that way. Like, that would be my new thing.
I'm Lord Halfwit.
And I'm your Lady Historian. I like it.
All right. That's funny.
So as a side note, a knight, aka a sir or a dame, is a lower title than a lord. Lords are like life peers, aka like baron, count, that kind of thing. And their nobility is passed on hereditarily, whereas a sir is either awarded a knighthood directly or is a hereditary knight. In other words, like your dead father was a baronet.
Right.
So I don't know why a knighthood costs more than a lordship.
Because people want to be called sir.
I'd rather be called a lord.
Yeah, but lord doesn't get used around like now.
I guess, yeah.
Whereas like the Sir Elton John, Sir
Ian
McKellen.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. So,
supply and demand.
Yeah. it's a lot more complicated than like that basic thing, but like life peerages aren't bestowed, at least in the UK anymore, so it's kind of like a kind of dying out a little bit. So probably it is because sir and dame are like more commonly known for like non-British people.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's just like it's being offered as like a generic title that like doesn't really have any meaning behind it, and hoping no one.
Are you insinuating that any of the either titles insinuate any meaning?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying.
Okay.
Anyway, if you aren't interested in a title, but you want to own a little bit of sea land just for yourself, you can buy a piece of sea land territory for $30.
How many pieces of sea land remain? There's not many to give.
See, that's my concern here, because there really isn't much territory to sell off.
Yeah.
So is it more like symbolic?
It must be symbolic, because when Cards Against Humanity sold like an island between the US and Canada, they did like, you know, a square foot per person.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd only be able to sell to 168 people, mm-hmm, if you were doing this for sea land.
Yep. Another option is you can simply purchase a sea land identity card to express your support. No background check necessary, and that's 100% not legal. Do not pull that out if you ever get pulled over, aka that ID. It will not get you out of a speeding ticket or anything.
I mean, your ID never gets you out of a speeding ticket.
Well, no,
ticket,
I mean, like, it's not a valid form of identification.
Yep.
Additionally, the Sealand gift shop has a wide selection of interesting items, including a Sealand flag, a Sealand mug, stamps, shirts, and Princess Joan commemorative coins, just to name a few. And that's the Principality of Sealand. So BRB, gotta go become Lady Kylie Bickford.
Yeah.
For $40, $45.
Is it worth it? I kind of think it is. I feel like there would be a taint on that.
You get like a legitimate like certificate, like kind of like a college like diploma that's like stamped and like signed by the prince and everything.
This is crazy.
I'm kind of like all for it. Like, I just want to be like, I am Lady Kylie.
Oh boy.
Yeah. So that's that.
Call to action?
Yes.
Okay. Go buy us Lady and Lordships of Sealand.
Yes.
That's all.
You don't need to check out our Facebook. You don't need to check out our Twitter. Just,
which is at Halfway History.
Just buy us a lordship and a ladyship. That's all I want for like the rest of my life.
Wild. I'm glad you picked this over morbid stuff.
I felt that it would be nice and lighthearted. So.
Yes, we've needed it.
Yeah.
I'm sure our listeners have too.
Yeah.
Okay, so find us on Facebook and Twitter at Halfwit History, like I whispered earlier. You can go to our website at www.halfwit-history.com. And if you want to support us in a way that is not buying us a lord and ladyship.
But you should do that.
You could do either.
or do both.
You can go to ko-fi.com/halfwithistory and throw us a few bucks.
Yeah. And if you want to send us an email, you know, to like let us know that you got us a lordship and a ladyship, you can email us.
Something just fell upstairs.
Our ghost is acting up.
Our ghost is acting. Yeah. So,
he's been flicking the lights and now he's throwing stuff around upstairs.
Yeah, I don't think we've talked about this on the podcast before, but Kylie has a ghost that follows her around, and it's been gone for a good long time.
Pretty much since we got engaged, and now since we pushed back the wedding, it's back.
Yeah, it's angry.
Yikes.
Okay,
anyway.
Our email is halfwitpod@gmail.com. If you don't hear from us, the ghost has gotten us. It threw something big upstairs.
Yeah, like, I'm a little afraid now.
And we have not been upstairs for a good long while.
Oh, boy. All right. Well, yep, please email us, and at least just to check that we're still alive.
Check in to make sure we're still here and kicking.
Yep, that'd be great. Anyway, fun facts.
No. Thank you to the fisherman for the use of our theme song, which maybe this is the last time you'll be hearing it, because Ghost is getting violent again. Our theme song is Another Day. You can find their SoundCloud down in our show notes, and check them out, support them. They're great people.
Yes, if I'm about to die to a ghostie, I want my last wish to be to go check out the fisherman and get me a ladyship. That way, on my tombstone, it can be Lady Kylie.
Yes.
Killed by ghost.
Killed by ghost. for not getting married because of pandemic.
Yep. Anyway, now fun fact.
Now fun fact.
I really want to just like wrap up this episode before that ghost murders me.
Yeah, I guess. So my fun fact is on September 1st of 1922, New York City law requires all pool rooms to change their name to billiards rooms.
I wonder why.
Yeah, why were they so offended by pool room?
Well, maybe it was because, like, swimming pool? I don't know.
Maybe. I don't know.
Who knows? Anyway, okay. So on September 2nd, 1798, was the first bank robbery in the United States. The Bank of Pennsylvania was robbed of $162,821 at Carpenter's Hall, Philadelphia.
Wow, that's a big chunk of money.
Especially for 1798.
Especially for the first bank robbery. Yeah. They really went big.
It was a heist of the century.
Yeah.
Yep.
Cool. Well, as always, I'm your future Lord Halfwit.
And I am your future Lady Historian.
And we hope you listen next week.
Bye. Since you've gone another day, baby, please don't call my name. Since you left another man, I feel you won't recognize me. Even if we meet.